no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. This is the Relic Radio Show, 60 minutes of radio drama brought to you every Tuesday by RelicRadio.com. First story this week comes from Suspense. We'll hear Five Canaries in the Room, their story from June 8, 1943. After that, it's The Barefoot Nymph and Mother Hubbard Jacket from Voyage of the Scarlet Queen. That episode aired August 28, 1947.
Suspense. This is the Man in Black, here again to introduce Columbia's program, Suspense. If you have been with us on these Tuesday nights, you will know that suspense is compounded of mystery and suspicion and dangerous adventure. In this series are tales calculated to intrigue you, to stir your nerves, to offer you a precarious situation, and then withhold the solution until the last possible moment. And so with Five Canaries in the Room and the performances of Ona Munson as Anita, Osa Masson as Fifi, and with Lee Bowman as Ronald Denham, who tells the story, we again hope to keep you in suspense.
The trouble was, you see, that a whole apartment vanished. It's true. A flat disappeared straight out of that apartment house, and the dead man disappeared with it. No, I'm not crazy. And in spite of what they said, I hadn't taken too many drinks. You see, I was getting married to Anita in another 2 weeks, and Jimmy Westlake gave a bachelor party for me. Oh, hang it, it's a situation that might have happened to you. The party was at the old Cap and Bells Club on Lower Fifth Avenue, and it wasn't a brawl. Jimmy Westlake was in the chair, I admit. But nothing could have been more quiet, more dignified.
Mademoiselle from Armitage, Barley Boo. Oh, Mademoiselle from Armitage.
Quiet, you fellas, quiet!
Pipe down, can't you? Wait a minute, the chairman wants to say something.
Gentlemen, this is a solemn occasion. Those dopes over there will kindly get away from the piano and sit down at the table. I have another toast to propose.
Excuse me, Mr. Westlake. Excuse me, please, sir.
Yes, Uncle Cato. What is it?
Excuse me, Mr. Westlake, but you ain't going to bust the glasses on this toast, is you?
And why shouldn't we bust the glasses, Uncle Cato? Why shouldn't we bust the glasses?
Oh, but Mr. Westlake, if you keep on busting the glasses, there ain't going to be no glasses left.
Well, in that sad eventuality, Uncle Cato, we will simply start busting the plates. Isn't that fair enough, boys?
Yeah!
So we'll bust every goblet in the so-and-so place.
Oh, look, Jimmy, don't you think you'd better tone the gang down a little?
Be quiet, Ron. You're only the groom.
Yeah, I know, Jimmy, but...
Gentlemen, I regret to tell you this, but the protesting voice you just heard was that of our guest of honor, Ronald Denham. Now, we all know Ron, and we all like him. But I am sorry to say he is not himself. Where now is the terror of nightclubs, the chorus girl's friend? I say it to his face. He is sober. But we like him just the same. Friends, guests, and bachelors, I give you the groom.
The groom!
chairman, don't bust the glasses.
Hey, come on, Ron. Come on, say a few words.
That's right, Ron. Get up.
Come on. Now, look, boys, I thank you for all the good words, and I don't want to be a wet blanket on the party, but it's nearly midnight, and I've got to get home early. Don't you understand, boys? I'm a reformed character.
Yeah, how's Fifi Latour?
I haven't seen Fifi for over a year. She doesn't mean anything to me anymore.
He thinks he doth protest too much.
Oh, now look, I'm marrying the sweetest girl in the world. But Anita's a little, well, straight-laced. Oh, yeah. You know how it is. What's more, there's my Uncle Rufus.
Uncle Rufus.
We'll hang Uncle Rufus to a sour apple tree.
Quiet! Quiet!
Anita and Uncle Rufus. Anita and Uncle Rufus have apartments in the same building as I have. And what's more, they're on the same floor, and that's not all. Tom Evans, the fellow I share my flat with.
Hey, wait a minute. Where is Tom Evans tonight? What's the matter with him?
Tom works for Uncle Rufus, and he doesn't drink.
Oh, he works for Uncle Rufus.
Hey, fellas.
And he never takes a drink. Oh, he works for Uncle Rufus.
Quiet, you baboons. Quiet.
He's a roaring water broker, and his beverage is ink.
Now, wait a minute. Will you put yourselves in my place? My girl and my uncle and my best friend, Tom Evans, are all expecting me to come home from this party in an ash cart.
Sure.
And I'm going to fool him.
Right, you is that so?
Oh, now have a heart, can't you?
This Uncle Rufus must be a pretty tough egg, isn't he?
Oh, he's all right, but after his first $1 million, it went to his head.
Has he got any human weaknesses?
Yes, he keeps canaries.
Oh,
no, not the kind of canaries you're thinking. I mean the kind that go tweet-tweet in cages. Oh, what's the use?
What do you say, gentlemen? Shall we allow this pure in heart to wend his way home?
He's got a drink to the bride, though.
That's right, Ron. Can you, as a chivalrous gentleman, refuse to drink to the bride? You can't, and you know you can't. Uncle Cato.
Yes, sir, Mr. Westlake.
Get a beer mug from the sideboard there. Fill it with champagne.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Jim.
One more drink won't hurt you, surely. Just one little drink?
Well, no, I suppose not.
Fill it up, Uncle Cato.
All right, I'll have one more drink, just in honor of the occasion. But that's all, do you understand? That's absolutely all.
Yes, 098 Park Avenue. Hey, mister.
Hmm?
Come on, wake up.
Hmm? What's wrong?
Well, you're home, mister. This is the apartment house.
Oh, yeah. Yes, of course.
Come on. Thanks. Here we go. Easy now. Are you sure you're all right?
Yeah. Yes, I'm all right. I've been to a bachelor party.
Yeah, sure, I know. Well, take it easy now.
I can't see straight. The whole street's going around. The funny part is, I only had a couple of drinks. They must have put something in that last one.
Well, it's none of my business, mister, but I wouldn't tell that to the missus if I was you.
It's absolutely true.
Oh, sure, sure. I know.
And I haven't got a missus. Not yet. My word of honor, I'm a reformed character. I have nothing to do with any woman except...
Ronald Denham. As I live and breathe, it is Ronald Denham.
Fifi Latour.
Oh, chérie, how good it is to see you. I look everywhere for you. I cry my eyes out, but I don't find you. What are you doing here?
I live here, Fifi. I moved.
Oh, you tried to get away from me, yes?
Yes. No. I mean, here's your money, driver. Night.
Well, good night, sir. It's a friend of yours, lady. You better take care of him.
I'd take care of him. Yes, you bet you. My poor Ron. I forgive you this time because you've been on the wrestle-dazzle and you need someone to take care of you. You live in this building, yes?
Yes. Fifth floor,
Oh, good. I take you to your apartment.
No.
You say no, eh? And why not?
Because you mustn't go in there.
Oh, there's another woman. What? Oh, yes?
Well, yes. The fact is, Fifi, I'm going to get married.
Married?
Oh, for heaven's sake, Fifi, don't make a scene in the middle of the street.
Oh, you break my heart, eh? Right in the middle of Park Avenue, you take my heart and you break it, bang, bang.
Fifi, please.
Now I tell you what you do. You will take me to your apartment this very minute.
No, definitely no.
You will give me one cigarette and one brandy. You will tell me what this means. Oh, I warn you, by golly, I start screaming so they can hear me at City Hall.
I can't do it, Fifi.
All right, then I start screaming.
No, wait a minute. Oh, of all the times in the world you had to pick this.
Do I go along, chérie? Yes or no?
Well, if I do take you, Fifi, will you promise to be good?
Chérie, I am always good.
You won't kick up a row or start banging at doors. Oh, if Anita heard of this.
Anita? And who is she?
Oh, never mind. I'm too groggy to argue. Come on. I remember going into that building. Dim religious light, deep carpets, an automatic elevator that you work yourself. I remember stepping into that elevator because the floor creaked. I remember pressing the button for the fifth floor. I took Fifi with me, and I took her into what the champagne told me was my own flat. Maybe you think that's funny, but it won't be funny much longer. Either the door of the flat was unlocked or my key fitted it. Anyway, I remember stumbling through the little hall inside, getting a light on, and into the living room. I remember sitting back in an easy chair, thanking the Lord I was home.
Mind if I take my coat off, Cherie?
Look, Fifi, couldn't you just go home?
I want to talk to you, Cherie. And this is one very nice flat. I like it.
Thanks a lot.
You and Tom Evans, you have good taste in furniture.
We didn't choose the furniture, Fifi.
This girl of yours chose it, I suppose?
No, it comes with the flat.
Oh, you mean?
Well, these are furnished flats. They're all furnished exactly alike, except for the personal things you bring yourself. Like that picture on the wall behind me.
What picture, Cherie?
The painting of the clipper ship over there.
But, Cherie, your eyes are funny and you cannot see straight. There's no picture on that wall.
Wait a minute.
What's wrong? Why you jump up?
We don't own any bronze bookends. And the lampshades are different. And, Fifi, we're in the wrong flat.
Oh, well, then that explains everything.
Explains what?
It explains about the canary birds.
What canary birds?
When we first come in here, I think I hear a lot of birds sing. And I think, ooh la la, this is a funny taste for Ron Denham and Tom Evans. But then...
Uncle Rufus. Great Scott. Uncle Rufus.
This uncle of yours, he keep canary birds?
Yes, five of them. But this isn't his flat. I know his flat as well as I know my own. Where'd you hear the singing?
Behind that door over there, where I point.
That ought to be the door to the dining room. But what was that?
Oh, there's a car backfire. Maybe yes.
Maybe no, unless they keep cars in dining rooms. That was a gun.
It came from the dining room.
Yeah, I think so.
Quick, let's get out of here.
Oh, no, we don't. I've been pushed around tonight till I'm good and mad, and I'm just about crazy enough to find out what this is all about.
You're not going to open that door.
You just watch me. There's a light in that room anyway.
How you know?
Look under the sill of the door. Not a very bright light, but...
Ron, don't do it.
Stand back now while I get the door open. Dining room. Not Uncle Rufus.
And five canary birds.
Five canaries in cages, all in a line. Where in Satan's name are we?
Well, sure, I don't know.
Whose flat is this? Who except Uncle Rufus would keep five canaries?
I tell you one thing, though, and then I go out of here.
Well?
There's somebody watching us.
Where?
Swing door to the kitchen is partly open. But don't look.
How the devil can I see it if I don't look?
There's somebody standing behind it. I see the light shine on his eye.
Quiet, Fifi. Hello there. Hello there.
The door move a little more. He's pushing it.
Oh, excuse me, sir. We didn't mean to barge in here. We're not burglars or anything like that. We got into the wrong flat, that's all. I want to apologize if we...
Straight out through the door, back on his face.
What's the matter with him? Why don't he move?
I've got an idea, Fifi. It's because he's dead. He was a little fat man with eyeglasses and a spade-shaped beard. He looked... foreign somehow. And there was a bullet hole over his heart. You ask me what happened then? I don't know. Fifi turned and ran. At least I think she did. I bent over the man to make sure he was dead. And then something hit me. As though it hadn't been enough of a nightmare already, I could hear that blackjack strike the back of my skull. And everything exploded. I couldn't get my breath, and I seemed to be swimming in dark water. The next voice I heard wasn't Fifi's at all. It was Anita's. And...
Ron Denham.
Oh, my head. Oh, Lord, my head.
Well, I'm not at all surprised.
What's that, Anita? I can't hear you.
I said I'm not at all surprised. Of all the disgraceful, dissolute objects I ever saw.
Anita, where am I?
Oh, darling, as though you didn't know.
But I don't know. My head feels like a printing press in full blast.
Well, you're out in the main hall, dear, on the fifth floor, sitting on the stairs beside the elevator shaft.
That's true. But how did I get here?
Oh, now, really, Ron.
I must have been carried here. That's it.
By your drunken friends at the club? Well, I don't doubt it in the least.
No, Anita. No, you don't understand. I left that party early. I was cold sober. But the low hounds wanted to see me come home in bad shape. So they put something in my glass.
Oh, naturally, Ron. Whiskey or champagne?
Oh, no, Anita. I mean a drug of some kind. I was dizzy when I got here. Just as I was getting out of the taxi, I met...
Well, go on, dear. Whom did you meet?
Nobody, Anita. Nobody at all. I came up here to what I thought was my own flat, but it wasn't my flat. It was somebody else's. There were a lot of canaries singing and a dead man with a bullet hole in his chest. And... Well, this sounds pretty crazy, doesn't it?
Yes, dear, it certainly does.
Yeah, but it's true.
Oh, Ron, I suppose I've got to forgive you. I always do forgive you. Now run along like a good boy and sleep it off, hmm?
Listen, Anita. There's a dead man in one of these flats.
A dead man? In which flat?
Well, that's just it. I don't know.
You're not saying it's on this floor?
Yes, I definitely remember pressing the button for the fifth floor.
Suppose you listen to me, dear. Now, don't make faces and rumple your hair. Just listen. There are only two other apartments on this floor. One is your uncle's.
It wasn't his. I'll swear to that.
Well, and the other is mine. You don't think I'm hiding a dead man?
No, it wasn't your flat either.
Well, then where is it, darling? A whole flat can't vanish and take the dead man along, can it?
No. But I'll tell you something else, Anita. I've seen that man's face somewhere before.
Well, whose face?
The dead man's. Thick eyeglasses, square black beard, something foreign about it. I've seen him, or I've seen his picture, or...
Oh, Ron, please.
What's wrong?
It's the elevator. Somebody's coming up. Oh, please don't let people see you. Your hat's smashed in and your tie's untied, and you look like nothing on earth.
Well, look here, Anita. If it comes to that, what are you doing out in the hall in negligee and pajamas?
Well, I wanted to make sure you got home safely. Ron, the elevator, it's Tom Evans and your Uncle Rufus.
All right, I can take it.
But your uncle can't. Now, don't say anything to him about this dead man. Promise me.
Hold on, I've got it. Pierre Duroc.
Who?
Pierre Duroc. That's the dead man's name. He...
And furthermore, Evans, you may expect from me that in this year of 1938, the prospect of a European war is so remote as not to be worth serious consideration.
Excuse me, sir, but isn't that a little strong?
Now, don't argue with me, Evans.
No, sir.
You may tell my secretary to... Look here. What's this?
Well, now look, Uncle Rufus.
Oh, I can't stand any more of this. I'm fed up.
Well, I don't blame you, my dear. Has this nephew of mine been annoying you again?
Oh, no, of course not, but please don't pay any attention to him. He's drunk.
For the last time, I am not drunk. I just want to ask Uncle Rufus before I go completely nuts whether he hasn't heard of Pierre Duroc.
What's that, Ronald? What'd you say?
Pierre Duroc, the French millionaire.
Well, what about him?
He's the man who always deals in cash on the line. Spot cash, even if it's a million. I saw his picture in the paper. He's in New York to put through a business deal with you, isn't he?
Oh, indeed, Ronald. Well, you show a commendable interest in my affairs.
Well, that's what you want me to do, isn't it?
Well, I believe Duroc does want to buy some property I own, but he hasn't approached me and I haven't approached him. It's a bad business. Why have you developed this sudden interest in Duroc?
Because he's dead.
Dead?
Somebody shot him in a room full of canaries and then slugged me over the head. Do you believe me, Evans?
If your uncle will excuse me, old man, I don't see any reason not to believe you. Where's the body?
Well, that's the trouble. Ron claims he found it in a flat that doesn't exist. Listen. What's that?
Sounded like somebody running upstairs in the devil of a hurry.
Well, maybe it's the dead man.
Well, as a matter of fact, it's the night porter. He's the one who can tell us.
Tell us what?
Well, maybe I did get off at a different floor, but that flat's got to be somewhere in this building. Pearson! Oh, just a minute. Pearson!
I'm very sorry, sir. I can't stop now. Please stand aside. I've got to go upstairs and get the manager.
Why, Pearson? Is anything wrong?
Well, Mr. Evans...
Speak up, man. Is anything wrong?
It's the police, sir. We found a dead man in the palm garden downstairs.
Now do you believe me?
You will oblige me, all of you, if you remain quiet and allow me to deal with this. What does this man look like, Pearson?
He's a foreign-looking gentleman, sir. Never saw him before. He doesn't live in the building.
Well, then how did he get to the palm garden?
Well, sir, that's what we don't know. He certainly wasn't there when I looked in half an hour ago. But I went back to the palm garden just by chance, and there he was in a wicker chair with the singing birds in cages all around him.
Birds again?
Oh, be quiet, Ronald.
He'd been shot, sir. The police think he was brought down in the service elevator from somewhere upstairs.
Why do they think that?
Well, of course, they found a revolver in that elevator and a little paper band of the kind that goes around banknotes. If they could tell where the dead man came from...
You can tell us where he came from.
Huh? I can, sir.
Yes, you've been in most of the flats in this building, haven't you?
I've been inside all of them, sir. Why?
Well, would you recognize any given flat if I described it?
Yes, sir, certainly, but...
Well, then, for the love of Mike, think. Who lives in a flat with five canary cages in the dining room?
Ronald... Are you out of your mind? In case you don't happen to remember, you're describing my place.
No, it was like your place, but it wasn't at all the same. Oriental prints on the walls. In the living room, bronze bookends and bronze lamps. Dragon patterns on the lampshades. There was a queer kind of clock on the mantelpiece, shaped like a figure of Father Time. And what's the matter with you, Pearson?
Nothing, sir. But you're sure you saw all that?
Yes, of course I'm sure. Why not?
Because, I'm sorry, sir, but you couldn't have seen it.
What do you mean I couldn't have seen it? I did see it. Who lives in the blasted place?
Nobody.
Well, you mean the flat's vacant?
No, sir. I mean, there's no such flat in the whole building.
And that's the position I was in when the police took us down to that palm garden to see the body. I never did like the palm garden much. It's a big, dimly lighted hollow of a place, with bird cages beside the palms and an artificial goldfish pond in the middle. I liked it even less at 3 o'clock in the morning with a dead man looking at me from his chair. They sent us in one at a time. I was first to see the homicide squad officer. And there was Inspector Braddock, big, sleepy-looking hulk with a hat like a pirate, sitting on a bench throwing pebbles at that pond. Back would go his arm, and a pebble would hit the water. Back would go his arm, and a pebble would hit the water.
And that's all you got to tell me, Mr. Dunham?
That's all, Inspector. It happens to be true.
Oh, I believe you. After all, son, we've got corroboration.
Corroboration from whom?
From your other girlfriend, Fifi Latour.
But Phoebe's not here. She ran out of here as soon as Duroc's body fell through that door.
Yes, but she didn't run far. A cop wondered why she was running and brought her back.
Where's Phoebe now?
In that room there, talking to your official girlfriend.
Oh, that's fine. That's beautiful. The one thing I didn't tell Anita.
Why don't you wake up?
Wake up? How?
This isn't post office any longer. It's murder. And one of that gang out there shot Pierre Duroc.
Are you serious?
Serious. Sure, I'm serious. This is as clever and slick and mean a trick as ever went on the blotter. Pierre Duroc was one of the goats. You were the other. This uncle of yours is a fairly important guy, isn't he?
Wait a minute. Just exactly what are you saying about the old boy?
I'm saying he gets lots of publicity. This hobby of his, keeping dicky birds, must be pretty well known.
Yes, I suppose so.
All right. So if Duroc came to visit your uncle tonight...
You say if Duroc came to visit my uncle.
What you're forgetting, son, is that Duroc's an important man, too. He's a visiting foreigner, capital letters, and the department's got to keep an eye on him. Duroc did go to visit your uncle tonight, and he was carrying $20,000 in cash.
What are you intimating?
Murder.
Inspector Braddock.
Yes, Sergeant?
That crowd out there is raising Cain, especially the old man and the French gal. Shall I let him in?
Yeah, you can let him in now.
An hour. No, more than an hour. Sitting in an anteroom without even hearing why we're here. I tell you, Evans is intolerable.
It's all right, sir. They probably know what they're doing.
You think so, my friend? But I still don't know why I'm here.
How very interesting, Miss Latour. Such extreme absent-mindedness. Well, perhaps Ron could tell you why you're here.
Oh, listen, Anita, I can explain everything.
Can you explain the disappearing apartment? Well, that's better. I'd like, if you don't mind, to have a little quiet here. Now, which one of you is Mr. Rufus Denham?
I am Rufus Denham, sir. Rufus Denham of Denham & Company. Can there be any doubt whatever about that?
No, but I thought I'd ask. I was just telling your nephew, Mr. Denham, that Pierre Duroc came here tonight to see you.
To see me, Inspector?
That's right.
I can only characterize that statement, sir, as a flat and downright lie. I've never met that man.
I didn't say you met him. I said he came here to see you. Duroc wanted to buy some property from you, didn't he?
Well, I suppose he did.
And Duroc always paid spot cash, didn't he?
Yes, I believe so.
Just one more question. I imagine you've got a secretary.
Yes, naturally I've got a secretary. Miss Helen Gardner. What about her?
Somebody, posing as your secretary, telephoned Duroc at the Metropolis Hotel and spoke to him in very good French.
Well, Inspector, don't stop there. Go on.
This person, pretending to represent Rufus Denham, asked Duroc to come here with the money and said they could settle the deal immediately. Don't you see the trick now? Don't you see Duroc was lured into a dummy apartment?
A dummy apartment? What does this man mean?
I'll tell you. All the flats are furnished exactly alike except for personal things. Pictures, books, lampshades, ornaments. Is that correct?
Yes, of course it is.
The murderer didn't dare use Rufus Denham's real flat. But the murderer could always decorate an imitation flat so that Pierre Duroc would be deceived when he saw...
five canary birds.
That's it, son.
But what was the idea?
A very neat swindle. Look at Duroc's body now.
Oh, I can't look at it.
Look at his thick glasses. Well, the man was half blind. This so-called secretary, disguised, would meet Duroc in an imitation flat. Duroc would hand over the money and get forged title deeds in return. When Duroc had gone, the flat could be put right again and no evidence left.
But something went wrong.
That's right. Something went wrong. Duroc suspected.
And had to be killed.
Right again.
Inspector Braddock, who is the murderer?
Can't you guess?
Grignon, I think I know how it all happened.
Do you, Miss Latour? Well, it's very smart of you.
This poor Ronald of mine, he is at a bachelor party. They do not think that he will be home until daylight. But he get reformed and come home early. He blundered straight into that flat in time to interrupt...
In time to interrupt the murder, yes. Afterwards, when you were supposed to run away...
But I did run away.
Sure, Miss Latour, I'm admitting you did.
Then why do you look at me as though I didn't?
Afterwards, as I was saying, the murderer had to hit Ronald Denham over the head and drag him out in the hall. Duroc's body was brought down here along with the canary cages that had been borrowed from here. And the dummy flat was set right again.
Just one moment, Inspector Raddick. I'm not disputing anything you say, but...
Well, sir, what's on your mind?
The murderer.
What about the murderer?
Well, all this. Wouldn't it have been much too heavy a job for a woman?
Who said the murderer was a woman?
Well, didn't you?
I don't think I did. I said the murderer was somebody who planned to swindle. And you still don't see it, any of you, because you can't find the dummy flat.
Well, no, and I can't find it myself. That's one question you've got to answer here and now. Where in Satan's name did I go? Whose flat was I in?
Your own.
What?
My own?
Naturally. If you'd been cold sober, you might have made a mistake. But your instinct brought you home to your own flat. And the only possible murderer is the man who shares that flat with you. The man who thought you'd be away until daylight. The man who knows enough about Denham's business affairs to plan this swindle against Duroc.
Look out, Inspector Braddock!
Grab him, Sergeant! Thomas Evans, I arrest you for the murder of Pierre Duroc.
Good Lord, Evans. Well, that's about all there is to the story. Anita and I were married last week. She's a wonderful girl. I tried to talk her into our staying on in my old flat, but she said she just had to have an apartment which didn't have such a habit of disappearing. But we're very happy. We agree about everything, don't we, dear?
Oh, practically everything, darling. But I still don't think it was cute of Fifi to send up 36 canaries for a wedding present.
And so closes Five Canaries in the Room, starring Ona Munson, Lee Bowman, and Osa Masson. Tonight's tale of... Suspense. This is your narrator, the man in black, who conveys to you Columbia's invitation to spend this half hour in suspense with us again next Tuesday, when our suspense play will be Last Night by Cornell Woolrich and will star more of your Hollywood favorites. The producer of these broadcasts is William Speer, who with Ted Bliss, the director, Lud Gluskin and Lucian Marowick, conductor and composer, and John Dixon Carr, the author, collaborated on tonight's Suspense.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Catch, Scarlet Queen, Philip Kearney, Master. Position, 120 degrees, 29 minutes east, 14 degrees north. Wind light, sky overcast. Remarks, departed port of Manila, 9 a.m. after canceling shore leave for crew. Reason for unscheduled departure, the barefoot nymph in the Mother Hubbard jacket. Days out of Swatow, China, that we raised the island of Luzon on the eastern horizon and stood in toward Manila. I swung the Scarlet Queen a little north of her course, and we passed close under the rocks of Corregidor. Every eye on our decks was turned toward the squat fortifications for a minute. By this time, they were covered with jungle growth again and were loudly silent, in the manner of monuments that hold the stories of men who made them monuments. Beyond the island, we could see the steaming mass of Bataan, and we swung back into Manila Bay. Manila should have been a friendly, relaxing port for all of us. It meant a break in our voyage under charter to Kangen Sun. To my crewmen, it meant the longest shore leave they'd had since we left San Francisco, and girls who knew what that meant to American seamen. To my chief mate, Gallagher, it was like a home state picnic. The harbor was jammed with freighters and tankers from the state. That meant that the Belanga Street bars were jammed with their crews. And that meant that Gallagher was jammed in with them, running into old friends and making new ones. Manila should have been a holiday. And it was, for 3 days and two nights. At 10 o'clock the third night, I was in the cabin alone, thumbing through the latest hydrographic bulletin I've been able to find in town, when I heard somebody running down the dock toward the Queen. Red! What's the matter? Her husband show up? What's up, Red?
Never mind.
Come on, calm down. What's the automatic for?
Leo, will you skip it?
Come on, give it to me, Red.
Get away from me, skip it.
You're off your nut. What happened? Who'd you kill, the president?
I might if he gets in the way.
Gallagher! With a wild-eyed mate and an automatic loose in Manila, there wasn't much time for the hydrographic bulletin. I closed it, locked my desk, and went out after him.
And so Mutual continues The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen, written by Gil Dowd and Bob Tallman, and starring Elliot Lewis. The Scarlet Queen, proudest ship to plow the seas, bound for uncharted adventure. Every week, a complete entry in the log, and every week, a league further in the strange voyage of the Scarlet Queen.
When Gallagher is being pushed by temper or is in a hurry, he walks as though he's working up against the incline of a pitching deck in a storm. His body bends forward from a point almost as low as his feet. His shoulders pull up protectively on each side of his head, and his arms barely swing in short arcs. I followed him up to Butanis Street, across the railroad tracks, through the park on Ambill and Dewey Boulevard, and to the left on Belanger. We passed three bars, and I could hear the fourth from a half a block away. The dimly lighted sign that hung outside said Victory Cabaret, but judging from the din of battle that poured out at us as we approached, somebody had been a little premature in naming it. The remaining activity was going on in the center of what was left of a large bar room. I lost Red for a minute, but then I found him in the center of the room.
Hey, Red!
What? I lost him again. Then I saw him heading toward a door at the rear of the room. Red!
Red, wait for me!
Hey, look! Watch him, will you? Here, you watch.
He'd stopped at another door halfway down a long, dimly lit hall by the time I caught up with him. He opened it. The room was furnished with a broken window, a woman who looked like Miss America, and a man who should have been in a morgue instead of sprawled on his face where he was.
Shut up.
You frightened me. I didn't know who you were.
What happened to him?
I don't know who did it. Somebody came in right after you left, and I tried to hide. Then the window broke, and I heard the shot. That's all it was.
Who is he, Red?
Cliff Peterson. He sailed on me as bosun last year.
Huh? What's the beef?
It started over Lona here, but it wasn't her fault. She was here with Peterson, and this drunk started pawing her, and Peterson poked him. That's where it started. Who was that guy, Lona? You know him?
I met him, yes. His name's Mason Ralph or something like that. But I don't know him. I don't know why he picked on me. I don't know why he picked... I'm not sure he's the one that killed Peterson, but who else could it have been?
He was wearing a gun. He started to pull it after Pete slugged him.
How'd you get mixed up in this, Red?
Because he pulled that gun. That's when I slugged him. And that's when he took a shot at me, and that's when I got sore.
Yeah, okay. Now you've collected a shiner and a split lip. You've had a fine night. Now it's time for bed. Come on, let's go.
Red, please. You promised me you'd help me out of this.
What?
I'm afraid to leave here alone. I don't know where that Mason is or anything. The whole thing's so crazy. I'm just scared to death.
Look, Skipper, take her home, will you?
Why me?
I didn't ask you to tag along, did I? But now that you're here, do something. I want to stick with Pete till I can get word to his ship. I hope somebody's around to do the same thing for me sometime.
At this rate, it won't be long.
Thanks, Skipper. Well, you want to fight your way out through the bar, or would a nice broken back window in a quiet alley do?
It was easier getting out than it had been coming in. I slipped out first. I crunched onto the glass, the window glass on the ground. I waited quietly for a minute to see if the noise had raised anybody. I gave the alley a quick once over. There was nobody in sight. But just as I started to turn back to the building, I caught a glitter of metal in the light from the window. It was a small nickel-plated revolver lying on the other side of the alley. Now, if the gunman had tossed it there, it was all right with me. I left it for the cops. Lona followed me out, and in 5 minutes, we were in one of Manila's prize two-wheeled horse-drawn rigs, and we were headed for her address.
I wonder what's going to happen.
The law is going to show up, and they're going to start scattering the bones. What usually happens with murder.
I'm so scared, I don't know what to do.
Oh, come on, calm down. You're a beautiful dame, and a couple of guys started fighting over you. In fact, the whole joint finally was. You're just living in the wrong century, that's all. Women thrived on that kind of stuff a few hundred years ago.
I suppose the police will get my name, won't they?
Well, you'll be lucky if they don't.
Oh, dear, that'll mean my job. It all started out to be an evening of... just fun.
Look, Lona, I don't feel quite as sorry for you as you do. I'll tell you why. Maybe it'll help you. It started out to be an evening of just fun for Peterson, too, didn't it?
I'm sorry, Skipper.
All right. Now, is there something else you'd like to talk about?
No, I guess you said everything.
The rest of the trip was not comfortable, but it was silent. We clapped across the Pasig River and turned down a wide thoroughfare that led in the general direction of the exclusive residential district under Tagate Bridge. The direction surprised me only a little, but her address, when we finally reached it, was as far removed as Manhattan's Beekman Place from the Victory Cabaret. In class, if not in miles. was a graceful mansion set behind a well-tended lawn that was made precisely irregular by a few neat garden plots, made primly informal by a number of mango and papaya trees that threw cautious shadows in the faint moonlight.
Well, aren't you going to let me out?
Yeah, if you're sure this is the right address.
Do you want to come in?
No, thanks. I'm confused enough out here.
You're a refreshing guy, Skipper.
Huh?
The helpless dame, and there are no passes or anything. Nothing but a brotherly remark about my being beautiful.
Yeah. I'm always shy with women I take away from dead men.
Oh. You kicked me all the way up from Belanger Street. I guess you just had to kick me into the house, didn't you? Good night, Skipper. Thanks.
Good night, Lona. Hey, Cochero. Back to the Victory Cabaret, Belanger Street. I paid my cochero off and headed into the Victory Cabaret. The only person in sight was a hefty, barrel-waisted bartender who was pushing a broom at the litter on the floor.
Keep your pay in your pocket, mate. I ain't open for business.
Yeah, so I see. What happened?
What happened? Well, I'll tell you. It was no more than a friendly little scuffle.
Yeah, looks it.
A few of the hands and a few of the ships come to shore for a good time.
The cops get here?
And it cost me a few $1,000. And somebody's got to keep up the morale in the Merchant Marine. A nice bunch of boys.
The cops. Couldn't they help you?
That's a good question.
Mm-hmm. Anybody killed?
So I hear. One outright and a half a dozen they wasn't quite sure of. You missing any friends?
Yeah, one. Big red-headed guy wearing a jumper with the sleeves rolled up, tattooing on his arms.
With a name like Gallagher. He's a friend of yours, you say?
Yeah, why?
You better be careful who you admit it to. They got him booked for murder.
They're nuts.
Oh, I don't know. The fellow was shot in one of my rooms back there. When they sneaked up on this Gallagher, he was outside the window with a gun that then the shooting's still in his hand.
They're nuts. I saw that gun lying out there in the alley myself. I can prove Gallagher didn't kill him.
Huh. That story, you better find another port. And while we're on the subject of moving, get out of here, will you? I lost enough friends in the force tonight.
I walked out of the door 10 steps up the sidewalk. And then 5 steps back. I watched the bartender pick up the telephone. This time I took a cab to Lona's address. I wondered what she'd say now about involving her name when it was to clear red. I had a few answers for that. And I was working on a few things to say to Gallagher for standing there in that alley with the murder weapon in his hand when we pulled up in front of the house. By the time I reached the door, I knew it was no good. It was 1 a.m., but I had a hunch that for Lona, the day hadn't ended.
Well, Skipper.
I hope it isn't too late.
It never is at my house. Come on in.
She had a sort of breathless expression when she talked to me. The corners of her mouth were drawn up slightly into a bare trace of a smile. Her lips were always separated, just a little. Her eyes were warm and brown.
Come here.
She led me through a short hall and down 3 steps into a large, carelessly furnished room. She was dressed in a hostess gown of some light, clinging material. Her hair went with her eyes, and it hung just short of shoulder length. Her feet were bare. We crossed the room, went into a den that had a tile floor, low, wide bamboo furniture, wide screened windows that looked out onto a side garden.
This is my favorite room. Do you like it?
Yeah, great.
I don't think you really like rooms. Some men don't. Sit down.
Uh-huh.
No, not there.
Hmm?
You see my abstractions. I paint a little. Over here on the chair. Here. You been drinking, or shall I mix one for you?
I haven't been drinking, and I'd like one.
All right.
How'd you know I'd be back?
Because I asked you.
I didn't hear you.
I didn't ask you with words. I asked you with me.
Oh. You're an amazing little creature.
Why are you looking at me like that?
Huh? You've changed so many times tonight that I can't stay abreast of it.
I change all the time, so I won't become monotonous. That's the only way I can stand myself. Which one of me do you like the best?
This one. Barefooted. With your hair down.
I was brushing my hair when you rang the bell. I don't think many women do, but I love my hair. So soft. Feel it.
Where do you come from?
Every place. Do that with my hair some more. What's your other name besides Skipper, I mean?
Phil. Huh. What's the matter?
Nothing. Nothing, darling. The glass just rolled off and broke. For a minute, I didn't know what it was. Listen. That sound will be this night, even when I'm old. Your nice, tanned face and your blue eyes and your strong hands. You think I'm beautiful, don't you?
I think you're beautiful.
Good to be with someone who thinks you're beautiful. Tell me.
You're beautiful.
Yes, I know. Darling, Phil, I'm so happy. It's so good to be beautiful with you.
Maybe it would have been different if I hadn't been afraid of her. Or if I hadn't been convinced that everything she said or did had purpose. Or if I hadn't known that each of us was waiting for the other to bring up the subject of Gallagher's arrest. But there was no doubt about one thing. And it was hard to keep it from overshadowing anything else. As she repeatedly stated, as she loved to state, as she loved to hear me repeatedly state, she was beautiful. From any measurement or any comparison, she was beautiful. But even she dropped the subject after a while.
Make mine weaker than yours, will you, Phil?
Let's put it the other way. I'll make mine stronger than yours.
It makes you happier that way. I'm willing.
Oh. Better get this glass off the deck unless you expect me to carry you around the rest of the night.
How long are you going to be in Manila, Skipper?
Oh, I don't know.
I wish it was going to be for a long time.
Yeah, it might be.
Phil, listen to me. I've got to say this. You've got to know I mean it.
Mm-hmm.
It happens, but it never happened to me, and now I think it could. I could fall in love. Don't laugh at me.
Don't joke.
I'm not joking. For the first time in my life, I think it could happen.
I'm sure you mean that as a great compliment. But somehow it doesn't hit me.
Oh, Phil, why are you acting like this?
Because I don't believe you. Because I've never had any reason to believe you. Because I've gotten nothing but lies from you ever since I met you.
But I'm not lying. Why are you treating me like this?
What other way is there? You're a great little animal to have around the house, but you're only safe when you're out in front where somebody can watch you.
All right, Phil. Maybe you know what you're trying to say.
So do you. For one thing, you killed Peterson.
I did not.
You were lying, man. You said he was shot from outside the window, and he wasn't. He was shot by somebody inside the room. You were the only one there.
I didn't kill him.
Now, don't think I haven't enjoyed your so alluring hospitality. But the smiling, spontaneous welcome I got at the door doesn't hold water. Because I'll bet you my ship that you knew I was on the prowl and probably heading this way 40 minutes before I got here, and you heard it from the bartender at the Victory Cabaret. I saw him go to the phone. What are you supposed to do? Hold me here? And for why?
What do you want, Phil?
I want my chief mate. I'll trade you or anybody else in on him.
Oh, Phil, why did you wait? If you suspected these things, why did you go through with the sham of life?
All I want is my chief mate. If you don't start doing something about it, I will.
All right, Phil. I have to make a couple of calls. The phone's in the other room. You carry me.
Hmm? Oh, yeah. It was the deal, was it?
I wonder why it had to be this way, Phil.
I don't know. I don't know what your game is, and I don't care, but you were in it before I was.
Phil, Red was only a coincidence. Really, he was.
Huh?
He just happened to know Cliff Peterson and sit down with us. And then the stupid redhead, he had to go out the window and find that gun and be standing there when the police showed up. So then Delkey had the brainstorm and twisted
the
story.
Who's Delkey, the bartender?
Yes, he told the cops that Gallagher instead of Mason had made the pass at me. That started the whole thing. And he went after Peter.
Yeah, yeah. All right, here's your phone.
Do you believe me, Phil?
How in the devil should I know when to believe you and when not to? I told you, I don't care. All I want is my chief mate. When I get him, I'll believe anything.
Gallagher was just supposed to stall things until Mason could get back to the States. He was leaving in the morning. I was supposed to hold you until his ship...
All right, fine. Let him find somebody else for a stall. Who are you going to start with, the chief of police?
Afraid the police think even less of me than you do. We have to settle this between Ralph Mason and Delkey and myself.
You're going to bring him out here?
Where else?
Looks like I'm going to be outnumbered, doesn't it? I stood by her when she made her calls, and as far as I could figure, they were straight. Just strong invitations to get to the house as quickly as possible. Then she made a typical exit into another part of the house, and I went back to the den. I thought the least I could do was to get rid of the jagged edges of our brief and hypocritical romance, so I got a bar towel and pushed the broken glass under the couch. When she came in, she'd gone through another complete change. She was dressed like her front lawn, primly, informal, in beige slacks, topped by an overmodest jacket, buttoned high around her throat, and hanging loosely like a Mother Hubbard to her waist.
It shouldn't be long, Phil. Maybe we could have a neat one while we wait.
Yeah, sure, sit down. Incidentally, I don't like your new character.
It's all right for the time of night, isn't it?
I guess so.
I think I ought to warn you, Phil. Mason is dangerous. He'll try to buy you off first.
Buy me off of what?
He'll try to talk you into... Do you want to go to the door with me? Or do you trust me enough to let me meet them?
I can't think of anybody I ever trusted less. Go ahead.
Connie, this is Ralph Mason, and I believe you said that you'd met Mr. Delkey.
Yeah.
What's on your mind, Connie?
My chief mate. I want him out of jail. I got enough on that mess in the Victory Cabaret to tell a pretty good story.
It's a pretty good story the way it stands.
Cops like it.
They won't by the time I get through with it. Just one thing. The glass from that window that was supposed to have been broken from the outside. None of it's inside the room where it should be.
You think that's enough?
Since they arrested Gallagher, standing on the outside looking in, it might be. Even Manila cops should change their mind on that one.
That story could wait, couldn't it?
Not the way I see it, no.
Here's your head, mate.
Don't be rude.
What's your price, Connie, to leave your mate in a jug until we're clear of this? For the truth, you can get him out any time.
It's pretty high. I'm leaving tomorrow.
I'll start with $15,000.
I don't think you can go high enough, Mason. You might as well quit. All I need is a patsy, and I don't care who it is.
May I say something, Ralph? I don't quite see why we have to bargain with Captain Connie. You didn't hesitate about Peterson after his double-cross, Ralph. Now Captain Connie is in the way.
When you hate real good, don't you?
It's business, Captain. I used such bad judgment when I offered to let you join our little organization.
You what?
What are you talking about?
Captain Connie has a ship that would fit into our inter-island work. I'm so afraid I made a mistake. I explained the type of contraband that was coming in from the States, the prices we were getting for it, and how there were opportunities for a man like him. I'm so sorry. He led me to believe that he was interested.
You're a sucker for men, Lorna. You found Peterson, too. That cost us $30,000 worth of stateside liquor and 3 months to get it over here. Peterson stole it on his own.
Not quite on his own, Ralph. He didn't have any contacts here.
Who was in with him?
Well, I was his very best friend in Manila.
Why, you dirty...
Mason shoved his chair out of the way behind him as he got up and started reaching inside his coat for a shoulder holster. That's when the Mother Hubbard jacket lifted a little on the right side and Lona's manicured hand pulled a belly gun from the waistband of her slack. It spoke twice, quickly and effectively, and Mason stiffened, and his right hand stopped an inch away from his gun butt, and he toppled slowly backward across his overturned chair.
Don't ask one question. I have this all worked out.
But, Lona...
You can solve the murder in your cabaret. You take Mason down to the police. Tell them the story of how the glass is on the wrong side of the window. You tell them you captured Mason single-handed and you'll gain a whole lot of new customers.
Well, they believe me, Lona.
It's the truth, isn't it? And here's the gun you captured him with to prove it. Now get him out of here. Good heavens. Look at that floor. I wonder what this all meant, Phil.
Hmm? Oh, what, Lorna?
This thing we lived through. It's been important, hasn't it?
Yeah, slightly. Two guys didn't make it.
Oh, no, that isn't what I mean. We did move everything and make this little room the center of the world, didn't we?
I wish I knew what you meant.
You wonder if I'm still in love with you, don't you?
Handedly, by this time, I don't know what I wonder.
I could be, Phil. I'm afraid it's impractical. If you'll just hold me, just once more. Tell me once more.
Beautiful, Lola.
And I'll always remember the glasses, Phil. It's getting late. You'll have to go.
Well, couldn't we have one more drink?
Oh, no, I wouldn't dare. Got to put my hair in braid and straighten the house up. My husband is coming home
Your
in the
husband?
Morning. He worries so about me, I have to have everything just
Your husband?
So.
Where is he?
Oh, he has gold mines in Mindoro. He's much older than I am. But he's rich. He allows me to stay here in Manila with my hobbies. Goodbye, Captain Carney.
By 9 that morning, Gallagher had been released. I'd rounded up the rest of my men and we slipped away from our berth and headed out through Manila Bay. We picked up a moist, hot wind at the mouth.
Stand by to make sail!
And the exhausted crew stumbled to their stations, every man bare to the waist and glistening wet.
With four feet, make sail!
Even the mainsail looked tired as it struggled up the mainmast and reached hopefully out for a pulling breeze.
And the jib sheets, men! Smartly now!
They didn't move smartly, but the jibs crawled out. Then the mizzen boom swung sullenly over my head. And the Queen rolled slowly down toward Verde Island Passage, the Sabuyan Sea beyond.
Well, I had a good rest last night, but it looks like I'm the only one aboard that did.
Oh, lay off, Rick.
Look at that crew. It's a disgrace. I'm half a mind to turn them all to Holystone in the deck from bow to stern.
Take over, will you, Red?
Oh, not on your life. This is your watch, and I'm going to take my exercise. That Manila jail air is invigorating.
Oh, lay off, will you, Red? Don't forget, I was sitting in the cabin with a hydrographic bulletin when you busted in.
Take it easy, Skipper. Go on below. I'll take your trick.
Ah, the devil you will. But just wait till you crawl aboard the next time. And don't think you haven't done it before. I'll hand you some sympathy.
What are my chances in the next port?
Fair, and I'll be waiting for you. It's Masbate.
Masbate?
Mm-hmm.
What do you know about that jail?
Nothing.
And before I take a nap...
Huh?
What is your outstanding recollection of the capital of the Philippines?
Some broken glass I pushed under a bamboo couch. And I wonder what her husband's going to say.
That's funny you mention that, Skipper.
Yeah?
I met a husband in jail. He was in for murder.
Who did he kill, the wife?
No, the smooth-talking stranger. Drink, Skipper?
He killed the wrong one.
After you, mate, after you.
Entry, the catch Scarlet Queen, 5:30 p.m. Miles traveled from San Francisco, 9,450. Wind light, sky overcast, sea leaden. Carrying full sail, ship secure for night. Signed, Philip Carney, Master.
Scarlet Queen has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
That's the Relic Radio Show for this week. You can find more from Suspense, Voyage of the Scarlet Queen, alongside thousands of other old-time radio episodes at RelicRadio.com. All the podcasts are there, our Shoutcast stream, and everything else Relic Radio. And support this and all of the shows through the website as well, or visit donate.RelicRadio.com. Your support makes it all happen. Thanks to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Tuesday with another episode of the Relic Radio Show.